Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
All right, we're live on this Thursday program. Welcome in. Lee Kelly is in studio with me, which means some high school basketball talk later in the program. But, Lee, we're in the middle of a great week. It was you were in Seymour as well on Tuesday. The games weren't great. The environment at Seymour is always great, whether that's sold out with 8,100-plus fans or whether the lower bowl is not even really full as it was the other night. But a great week. Now we've got the semifinals at Seymour that we wanted, which will be a lot of fun on Friday night. And I had the opportunity last night to slide up to Charlestown to see a couple first round games in that 7-team sectional that was hosted at Charlestown High School. Some good games there. And again, you walk into the gym. I've been in Charlestown's gym a million times. I've been in Seymour's gym a million times, but there's something different about it when you walk in there on game night of sectional week and you know that, unfortunately, a group of players from a couple teams are going to end their high school seasons or potentially even their high school careers if they are seniors. It's just a different feeling, and I think if you could put it all together, say, Matt, Lee, you've got the opportunity to go to some high school games in Indiana with great crowds and great environments and great players, or you've got a chance to go to the NCAA tournament and see some NBA future players and the best coaches in the country in the college basketball circles. I think I would choose the high school stuff. It's just what makes me tick this time of year. And we're in the middle of probably for guys like you and I, and I think for most others, even people that maybe don't follow the high school stuff on a regular basis, I think we're in the middle of the sweet spot, I call it.
Yeah, I agree. And you and I have talked through the years, even going back to your years in high school. I still get butterflies when I walk into that gym on sectional night or regional night or whatever it might be. I mean, it's a special time for fans, for parents, for players, and I just enjoy the heck out of it.
Yeah, fun weekend coming up. All of the first-round games across the area are now in the books. We'll take a look at some of the winners and losers in those games last night here in just a few moments as well. Let's jump into the guest lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. First segment, Lee and I will have Hoosier Headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. We'll take a look at last night's games. We'll have some Big Ten news and notes for you. A couple recruiting notes to pass along as well in this first segment. Then later in the program, segment two is Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall. Lots of IU basketball discussion and insight with Alex when he joins us each Thursday on the program. We'll also take a look ahead, of course, at IU's next game coming up over the weekend. And for this Indiana team, a very important stretch. They have been playing better. They've been playing with more energy. They finally got over the hump for a big victory. We'll see if that can continue over now into some of their future games to close out this regular season. Later in the program, Lee and I will focus in on high school basketball in addition to a lot of breakdown and look ahead at some of the Friday matchups now that all of our semifinals are set across the area. We'll also take a look at some of the top performers in the last week of regular season basketball and into this sectional week as well as we do every week. We'll give you the full rundown on games. We'll pick our game of the week as well, and it's kind of hard to pick a game of the week because you don't know exactly how things are going to work out for those Saturday matchups, but we'll do our best, and we'll have a player of the week as well. We've done it every week of the season. There have been some big point performances, just some big performances in general, and we'll recap everything for the final week of regular season, and of course into these Tuesday and Wednesday sectional games as well. They'll be included in our Player of the Week and other coverage and talk today in that segment. That's the guest lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Don't forget, you can mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, and you'll get $1 off your box lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's look at some Hoosier headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. And Lee, to start off, a couple Big Ten notes. The first one is, I guess, if you've been following the conference scores every night and paying attention to the Big Ten as a whole, it's probably not terribly surprising. But remember Penn State, the bottom feeder in the Big Ten Conference? They dominated Maryland last night, basically from the tip-off to the end of the game. They have been on a heck of a stretch here the last couple weeks. They've greatly improved their conference record. I don't know that, like Indiana, they're going to be able to do enough to make themselves viable for the postseason. But one thing that some of these wins are doing, I think they've beat three ranked teams now in the Big Ten this season. One of these things that wins like last night are doing, it's helping teams like Indiana, if Indiana can get within the reasonable discussion to get in the tournament. But it's helping other teams that Penn State that have beaten Penn State because they are improving their resume. So I'm not sure that earlier I would have told you Penn State had a chance to crawl out of the cellar of the Big Ten and beat three ranked teams and go on to have, you know what, a decent season, to be quite honest. But that's what's happening, and that's really kind of been the story of the Big Ten Conference in so many ways, that whether you're at the top or whether you're in that cellar, it's a competitive game many times.
And we've talked about this before on the show. The teams in the Big Ten, a lot of them that I normally associate with being middle to bottom of the pack teams in the Big Ten are still awfully good. They're not on the same level as some of the top tier teams, but the Penn States, the Marylands, the Nebraskas all have good players, and when they can stay healthy, they can put quite a product on the floor.
One other interesting note, this has nothing to do with any results, or I guess you could make an argument that it does, but Iowa coach Fran McCaffrey suspended two games for post-game comments toward an official. And by the report that I read, the news report by a sports reporter, he basically followed the guy down the hallway until the official could get out of Dodge by going off into an area for officials only. This was after the loss at Ohio State. Coaches can't call an official a cheater and not be disciplined. That's what Andy Katz tweeted, and I agree with that completely. Big Ten has fined the university an institutional fine of $10,000 and a reprimand for the school, for the team, and, of course, Coach McCaffrey, the suspended for two games. His team has been solid this year. Indiana dang near had him at Iowa, except for the unbelievable three-point shooting of Jordan Bohannon in the final minutes of that game into the overtime period. But not a good time, not an ideal time to lose your mind, especially once the game is over, to the officials and be suspended for two games when your team has been ranked, your team has an opportunity, definitely, I would think, to make the NCAA tournament, and you won't be there for some key games down the stretch. I bet Coach McCaffrey is rethinking his walk down the hallway chasing the official.
Well, they teed him up, and then they teed his son up in the same minute and a half of stretch. So that could have had something to do with it. I don't know if it's the coach coming out or the father coming out or a combination thereof. But, you know, that's one thing I want to talk today to Alex about is the officiating. Because Don Fisher, who I love listening to and have for years, mentions the officiating not very often normally, but on the game Tuesday night, as I was listening coming back from the sectional, he was talking about not the officiating not being bad, but the officiating being inconsistent within the same game. And I thought that was an interesting comment, that a foul or something called a foul at one end of the floor is not called at the other end in the same game. So that's something I want to talk to Alex about the officiating in the Big Ten and really across the country. Somewhere down the road.
Yeah, and I think the other night, and I'd have to go back and look at specifics, I bet Alex will be able to tell us, there were a number of Big Ten games where there were some controversial calls that night. And I remember a couple different people that I follow on social media that I have respect for their knowledge of the game and knowing who the officials are and that sort of thing, that had some critiques of some of the calls, and it was, you know, really related to the Big Ten. So I think that would be a good question for you to pose to Alex coming up here in the next segment. A couple other headlines to pass along here in this opening segment. A couple recruiting notes. Archie Miller took advantage of a brief off period to get out and watch a potential IU recruit last night. National top 50 class of 2020 prospect. So a current junior, Ethan Morton. Morton is from not far where the area basically that the Miller family is from, Butler area, Pennsylvania. So he was at a high school game there last night, getting a watch at a player that IU has some strong interest in. Also, remember Trendon Watford, Christian Watford's younger brother? IU's still kind of been listed with him. I don't know that anyone that follows it closely thinks that Indiana will ultimately be his destination. There are a number of schools down in the south toward where he's at in Mountain Brook, Alabama, at Mountain Brook High School, at least in Alabama, that you know, believe he will stay in that area. And he's got some strong suitors there. I read a story yesterday by Adam Zagoria, actually earlier this morning by Adam Zagoria, that Duke has contacted Trendon Watford and is jumping into the recruiting sweepstakes for Trendon Watford at this late date. And you know what happens when Duke seems to get involved with a player, other schools that maybe have been with him from start to finish, or they think into the finish, don't quite end up where they think they might. So that will be interesting to see how it plays out. But interesting that Trendon Watford, who's continued to mention at least Indiana, although I don't know how serious the interest is at this point, now has Duke in the picture as well. One final note, CBS Sports updated mock draft, Romeo Langford, they've got him at number 6 going to Memphis. And I've seen, again, Romeo at number 5, number 6, and I think number 8 in the three that I really pay attention to. CBS, obviously one of those, but they've got Romeo at number 6 heading to Memphis in the NBA draft, which, you know what, as fun of a time as we're in right now, Lee, with the high school stuff going, the NCAA, well, first off, conference tournaments coming up here before you know it, then the NCAA tournament, who knows where Indiana will be at, if they'll get in the NIT, maybe an outside chance. I guess this is wishful thinking for the NCAA tournament. But when all that comes to an end on that national championship Monday in early April, I tell you what, it's NBA draft time, and we're going to be able to fill what normally is somewhat of a void. You've got some all-star stuff, and you've got other basketball stuff. Recruiting stuff begins to pick up in the spring, and obviously there's other sports and things we want to talk about that we do every year on this program, but we're going to really be able to spend a lot of time with the NBA draft and following really Romeo's every move through that. At least we expect to be able to do that. I would be shocked if shortly after the season we don't get an announcement that he will leave Bloomington and go pro. But I was thinking last night, I need to call in some of my connections and get some good NBA draft media types ready and lined up for the show to give us some insight on Romeo and really the entire draft as we go through this process, because that'll be the next big story, I think, for us once the basketball season's come to a close.
Alex has been to the NBA draft, I know at least once and probably multiple times, but somewhere around the age of 12, he went to the NBA draft. And I'll tell you that story sometime. But, so I know he has experience. He could shed some light on what it's all like at that NBA draft.
Absolutely. Alex Bozich will join us in the next segment. Alex is with InsideTheHall.com. Lots of IU basketball discussion in the next segment as well. I also want to put a plug in before we close out this first segment that tomorrow on our Friday program, as we get ready for an exciting night of sectional semifinal play, we will have Todd Sturgeon, Jim Shannon, and also Jeffersonville coach Joe Luce on the program for brief interviews to get some game day insight into their teams and those Friday night matchups that they will go through at Seymour. And we again expect a great crowd and a lot of interest in those semifinal games. That's the headlines presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Hoopsters is your hometown sports grill with fresh made-to-order food, a great selection of craft brews, and the best sports atmosphere around. Hoopsters has karaoke and a DJ on Friday nights and a live band on Saturdays as well. Hoopsters in Jeffersonville, where fun happens. We'll head to a commercial break. Alex is next. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
We've got lots of stuff to get to today. Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall, our guest. I want to talk some about Penn State making a statement here in the Big Ten Conference late. The off-the-court stuff with Coach McCaffrey suspended at Iowa for a couple games. And, of course, we've got to get ready for the big IU-Michigan State. It's a rematch at home. Indiana's already got one big win over the Spartans. Another would go a long way in helping this team really make a strong close to the season. But I want to let Lee Kelly start this segment because I myself am curious about some of the Big Ten officiating, specifically in some of the IU games. But I know it's been something mentioned across the league as well, and I think you and Alex can have a good conversation on that.
Well, it's possible. I have my opinion about officials across the board from youth league on up from conversations I've had with them. First of all, good morning, Alex.
Good morning.
Secondly, Don Fisher, during the game, and I think it was the first half, talked about the officiating, and he had an interesting, what I thought was an interesting comment that the officiating is not consistent within the same game, from half to half, from play to play. You've been in the stands live watching this all year long, especially, and for quite some time. Your thoughts on the officiating this year from the games that you have seen?
Yeah, it's I'm not afraid to be outspoken on this on Twitter, and I think that the I'll first say that I think officials, it's kind of a thankless job at any level, right, from little league on up to the professional ranks. Obviously, there's a lot more at stake when you're talking about college basketball and professional sports, and there's a lot of money involved. But, you never – really the only time that you talk about officials is when you think something has gone wrong. You know, you rarely hear somebody say that was great officiating. You always kind of point out the negatives, so I will start with that. But I agree with – and I've listened to Fish quite frequently during the season, especially road games when I'm not at the game. I like to listen to his broadcast, and he brings a lot of good points and can get a little emotional at times when discussing it. But I agree with what you're saying in terms of the consistency. It seems like every year we start out the year in college basketball emphasizing new rules, and the first month or two, those things are emphasized. And then we get to this part of the season where it seems like we're kind of back to where we were before, where there is no uniform policy for how, for example, the block charges are called. Like, I literally have no idea when I'm watching a college basketball game how they're going to call a block charge. I don't know why it takes 5 minutes to go to a monitor when we can all look at the review in the arena when they're playing on the monitor and see what happened, but it has to be reviewed for 5 minutes, and all three guys have to go over and look at it. And I think it's just become something that, and I talked to another reporter about this in the game the other night, and he brought up an interesting point, and one I think that may be worth looking at in the future is these guys don't work consistently with each other. You know, it's not like you have a crew of three guys that works together all the time. And I think maybe part of it is guys not really having any flow, I guess, in terms of who they're working with on a game-to-game basis. If you're working, you know, five or six games a week, and every game you're working with a different person, it's hard to kind of build that camaraderie and kind of a chemistry with, you know, how you're going to, who's going to, you know, look for certain things. And I just think overall there's a lot of anger from obviously coaches and fans, and a lot of it's justified. Now there's always going to be errors made, but to me the monitor reviews have gotten out of hand I mean, to me, it should. If you're going to do the reviews like they are, why not put a fourth official at the official scoring table and have them handle it themselves and be looking at things as the game goes along to say, hey, guys, you missed that. We need to go back and look at something or whatever. But to just to kind of randomly look at things and then spend 5 or 7 minutes doing it, it disrupts the flow of the game, and also think just a lot of things are inconsistent in how they're called and applied. I mean, this hook and hold thing was something that's been called sometimes, and I've tweeted a couple of videos during the season of blatant hook and holds that weren't even looked at or reviewed. So you add it all up and you get situations like the other night with what Fran McCaffrey did, which never should have done, obviously, but you know, there's a lot at stake for these teams and players and coaches, and I understand the frustration and the anger that results from this.
Alex Bozich inside the hall, our guest, talking some Big Ten officiating to begin the segment. Plenty of other things we'll get to here with Alex. Let's start with IU Michigan State as far as basketball stuff goes. Indiana has recorded a win already this season over the Spartans. The Spartans are another man down, I believe, at least one since Indiana hooked up with them the last time. This game is at home. It is such an important game for Indiana, and I'm probably putting my foot in my mouth here, but I really feel like with how Indiana played against Purdue and Iowa, even though those games did not equal victories, and then, of course, how they came out earlier this week and played to win at home, if they play with that same energy level, if they play with that same care to the game, where every possession is valued, I can't see them not having success to be in the game or have a chance to win the game. But Michigan State might be on, even with some injuries, might still be considered, I think, on another level than the teams that I just mentioned. So no way around it that it's a tough challenge for Indiana when they could probably use a win, a back-to-back win situation the most this season with Michigan State coming to Bloomington.
Yeah, and as big of a game as it is for Indiana, it's even bigger for Michigan State because Michigan State has Big Ten title implications riding on this game. Purdue obviously is right there with them. Michigan a game behind in the loss column, and Michigan State still has to play Michigan at home. But this is it's big for Michigan State. They can win this game. They have a pretty good shot at least a share of the outright Big Ten regular season title. And don't think that they've forgotten about the game earlier this month. They're going to be ready to play. They won at Michigan recently without Nick Ward and Josh Langford. Ward is out, I think, until at least the conference tournament, if not maybe a little bit longer, it sounds like. And obviously Langford lost for the season, but Michigan State's going to come in and be ready to play. So Indiana's got to match that intensity. And I think the thing about Indiana is now for three straight games, they've brought it in terms of their level of effort. And despite the fact that they've only won one of those three games, they've, to me, looked like a confident, together bunch. So I would be shocked if Indiana's not in this game to the end with a chance to win it. And there's been a lot of things go against Indiana recently this season in terms of not winning close games, but good to see one go their way against Wisconsin just in terms of, you know, how hard they've played. Being rewarded for that, I think, was something they can build upon and have some confidence going into this game against what's probably going to be at worst a 2 seed in the tournament, maybe a 1 seed, depending on how Michigan State finishes out the season.
I hate to ask stupid questions, and I should know this. Where is the tournament this year for the Big Ten? Is it
Chicago?
Chicago, okay. Well, Indiana fans will have a shot. Chicago's a drivable place if they want to go up and watch the Big Ten tournament. And
yeah, next 4 years were Chicago, Indy. So no more, at least for the next 4 years, no more D.C. or New York. I actually didn't mind D.C. I liked it. New York was obviously from a logistical standpoint a little more difficult in terms of getting around up there because it's, you know, obviously such a not hard to get around, but just in terms of the amount of people up there, not as easy to navigate, but you know, it's good to have it back in the Midwest. We'll keep it at that.
I don't know that Chicago is any cheaper than New York, but both of them pretty expensive up there as far
exactly.
as being able to eat and stay and so on. Let me ask you a question. Almost every week, most of the time, every day, people are talking about where Romeo's going to be drafted and so on. I know that you've been to the NBA draft at least once. So share with us a little bit about what it's like at the NBA draft, if you will.
Well, it's changed a lot since I went as a kid. You know, if we all think that Romeo's going into the draft, and he'll definitely be, if he declares and is in the draft, he's going to be one of those guys that gets invited. So, I mean, he's going to, you know, they're going to have a table there right in front of the stage. They're going to have their cell phones out waiting for that call from whichever team picks him. And then he'll be obviously walking up on the stage. What a moment that'll be just from, I mean, that's something you think about as a kid growing up, I'm sure. If you have aspirations of playing the NBA, you can go on YouTube and watch all the past drafts of all your favorite players getting drafted and kind of watch them grow as pros. So that'll be a heck of a moment. But I think it's like a week-long thing. I think they get up there a couple of days before the draft, and there's a lot of things they do before the draft. All the guys that get invited to the quote-unquote green room guys. It's not really a green room because it's kind of an open setting where they're all kind of sitting there in front of the stage. But family and close family and friends will be there, and it'll be a cool thing to watch. And it's funny, we still have people asking if they think Romeo's going to be coming back for another year. I get that question, and I'm like, have you looked at any of the mock drafts? The guys get projected pretty much unanimously to be a top 10 pick. How do you pass up that opportunity? So it'll be fun to actually see that materialize here in a couple of months. But it'll be I think they moved it almost permanently now to New York. So I think when I went, it was in Indy maybe.
Yeah, I think
that
that's
was
right.
The early 90s. So that was, I think, the year that Grant Hill and Jason Kidd got drafted. So that was, it's been a long time since I've been.
And, Alex, along those lines, I was mentioning earlier in the show that, you know, when all this comes to a halt, when all the basketball's over, that's going to be a new storyline. And for you as well, a new thing to cover, a new thing to talk about, a new thing to write about. It's not on a yearly basis that you have a player specifically from our area here in southern Indiana that goes to the NBA draft. And again, we're speculating. We think this is what's going to happen. Until he makes an announcement that that's what's going to happen, it's all speculation. But Lee asked you about the NBA draft, and you know, it has changed a lot as far as the makeup of it and, you know, who is there and how it's set up. But there will be a lot of events and a lot of things that lead up to that draft on draft night in New York City, and that includes an NBA draft combine. That includes a lot of workouts, maybe in small groups or individually with different NBA franchises as well. So it's going to be something where, if this is what happens, if Romeo does make the leap to the NBA when it's all said and done, and there'll be plenty of time for this talk when we get there, but just to kind of think ahead about it for a minute since we're on the topic, you know, there will be regular things to follow with it because, again, there are a number of events leading up to and workout opportunities leading up to the actual draft.
Yeah, and it's a little different for the guys who are like the top of the heap in terms of workouts and what they do, because depending on who, and this isn't speaking specifically to Romeo or anybody in particular, but kind of depending on who the prospect is. There's been examples of guys not going to the combine at all or only doing certain things at the combine. If you have a pretty good idea that you're going to be the number one pick or the number three pick, or you have an idea which teams you're going to are really seriously consider drafting you, you're not going to necessarily go on a workout tour where you're working out for 10 or 15 teams, like, or maybe what happened with a guy like you know, Thomas Bryant, as an example, a couple of years ago that went as a second-round pick. He's going to take as many workouts as possible because he's trying to, you know, open the eyes of teams, whereas, say, this year, a guy like Zion Williamson, everyone knows he's going number one or in the first couple of picks. Same thing with an R.J. Barrett. They're going to, you know, once they see who gets the number one pick or the number three pick or whatever, they're going to only go work out for those teams. So it's different based on who you are, and Romeo will be an interesting case, you know, if he does declare, because you know, he's obviously a guy that's talked about as potentially, I think, the most recent mock draft on ESPN, which is now done by the Draft Express guys, they're pretty good. They've got him at 5. But so that could be a situation where, you know, you see the draft lottery and, you know, his agent or whoever's advising him could say, you know, hey, these are the teams going picking 4 to 8. Maybe these are the teams we want to go work out for or interview with or talk with. But most of the top guys do go to the combine, but they don't necessarily do all the testing or do the 5-on-5. That's more reserved for guys who are maybe later first-round picks, second-round picks. But it's definitely you have to get good advice because with the money that's at stake, you don't want to do anything that could potentially hurt you. And I think that's kind of what's happened in recent years with a lot of these guys who are going in the top 3 or 4. They've kind of built up their resume, so to speak, over the whole college season, and they don't want to give teams an opportunity to pick them apart, at least publicly. So they have an idea of which teams could pick them. The elite of the elite just go work out for those teams and leave it at that. So it's different kind of based on where you think you're going to go.
Yeah, let's get to a couple of things that have happened at IU and your opinion. Jerome Hunter apparently able to resume some workouts. Again, certainly not getting ready for this year, but at least able to begin the process of rehabbing, rehabilitating, and building his body back up again. What are you hearing about that young man in particular?
Yeah, I mean, it's a slow process there because there's no rush. There's no immediate need for him to ramp things back up. But, you know, I would expect that as the off season moves along, he's going to be ramping things up even more with a plan of being able to play next season. I haven't heard anybody say anything different that they think it's going to be something where he can't play again or he's going to have to sit out any more time. So I think he's kind of the forgotten guy for next year. As we, you know, the offseason, I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about the roster for next year and who's going to be important and who's going to be back and all this and that. But, I mean, before the season, I had a lot of people telling me that he was Indiana's third-best player and he hasn't suited up at all. So he could be a guy that at least makes a huge impact next season, obviously a lot dependent on health. And I think it's smart of the training staff, the coaching staff, to take it as slow as possible with him because it's a long journey ahead for him, but it's encouraging at least that he's getting back in some individual workouts and getting back to being healthy.
Alex Bozich, Inside the Hall, our guest, IU basketball, always the topic when Alex is with us. And that might be something to look back on, and again, you can't dwell on injuries and things that happen. Of course, with Jerome, it's obviously more than just your basic injury where you miss a part of the season or a few games. I mean, he has been out and is going to be out, it looks like, for some time. I think the hope is, and this is just a hope, that he's back and ready for next season to play. There's a lot of time between now and then, but a lot of things, and I understand, have to happen with him for that to be a possibility. But you look back on it, Alex, and I think I heard a lot of things from you, both on and off this program, and others as well, about Jerome Hunter. Got to see him a couple times in high school and in the summer months as well. And there was a lot of excitement. I think we forget that sometime. There was a lot of excitement with him coming to Indiana, not just for he's going to be a great player over a couple seasons for the Hoosiers, but someone that could come in and have a body and be physical enough and really was somewhat ready to play in the Big Ten Conference as much as a high school senior entering his college freshman year can possibly be. And along with that, there was a lot of talk. I won't say a lot, but there was talk about Jerome Hunter. He was coming to Indiana. I'm not sure if it would have been 4 years or not, or if it will be 4 years or not. He had NBA aspirations and some people, at least in his corner, that thought he was heading down that path.
Yeah, I mean, I still think there's a path to that for him if he can be healthy. But that's, you know, there's a long way to go with that. But he's intriguing because of his size and his versatility. And I mean, before Romeo committed, obviously he was the main guy in that recruiting class for Indiana. You know, Rob Finnessy, as good as he's been as a freshman, it was, you know, he was number, before Romeo committed, he was the number two guy in the class, and Jerome was the clear cut one in the eyes of most. And I was really impressed with watching him and AAU a couple different times and watching film of him in high school last year. I think he's a guy who's just got great size and he can shoot it and play multiple positions. And I think he's going to, as long as he can get healthy and be able to play, I think he's going to be a huge part of Indiana's program in the coming years.
Alex Bozich, Inside the Hall, our guest, talking some IU basketball. One quick more discussion or point on the IU Michigan State game over the weekend. You did a good job breaking down a lot of the points from that game. Obviously, with Indiana beating them earlier in the year, you would think maybe that leads to some confidence for Indiana, knowing that they're a good team, but that they can not only play with them but beat them. But closing this thing out, if Indiana can somehow find a way to win on Saturday when Michigan State comes to town, Wisconsin, Michigan State, and then if you got to believe if they can win Saturday, they could find a way to close out the season with a few more wins. If Indiana wins four in a row, and I might be, again, doing some wishful thinking. I'm accused of that from time to time here on this program. But if they do close out with four wins, if they're able to pull a big victory at Assembly Hall and then go on to finish the season without a loss, what does it take in the Big Ten Conference to be considered to at least be a bubble team, to at least be in the conversation for the NCAA tournament? Is it a couple wins? Is it getting to the championship? Or do you think even four wins with what else has happened here in the 2019 portion of the schedule that Indiana is really going to have to win the Big Ten tournament to make the NCAA big dance?
I don't think they have to win the Big Ten. If they win the next three, I don't think they have to win the Big Ten tournament. But if they win the next three, they're not going to play on Wednesday, the Big Ten tournament, so they won't play until Thursday. So I think they would need to win at least two games to get to Saturday, because if they do – if they're able to, and these are obviously hypotheticals that we have no idea what's going to happen, but I mean, if they did get to Saturday, that means that they would at least beat one of the upper tier teams in the Big Ten on Friday. And you know, the one thing that their resume does have going for it is they have a lot of high quality tier one type wins, and they could beat Michigan State and then pick up another one of those games in the Big Ten tournament. Then I think they have to be seriously considered at that point. Not saying they would make it. But if they can get to Saturday, win out the regular season, get to Saturday the Big Ten tournament, I think they would have at least a chance to at least get back in the conversation and have a chance to make it.
I was looking through Archie's record as a coach, matter of fact, a number of coaches, to see how they started out. Has Archie ever had a losing season as a head coach?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I don't have his record at Dayton in front of me right now, but I don't think he did have a losing season there. And obviously last year, I want to say they were 16-15 maybe.
I think that's right.
They were one game over, lost to Rutgers in the Big Ten tournament.
I just wonder how important that is to Archie. You don't know him, never met him, so I really don't know if that's an important part.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt it, just kind of observing him and watching how locked in he is to everything. I'm sure he's aware of their record. I'm sure he doesn't want to have a losing record, but I don't know that he would. I don't know how much he's thinking about that. If they win two of their last three, they guarantee themselves, I guess, at least a 500 record. Does that sound right?
I think that's right.
Yeah. So. You figure they're going to hopefully take care of business, at least at Rutgers, or the Rutgers game at home. That's the regular season finale at home. But can't get too far ahead. I think the Michigan State game, obviously. I really do think it's a game they have a chance to win, but they got to continue to play with the same level of grit, toughness, confidence that they've had recently. So we'll see how it goes.
Alex Bozich, Inside the Hall. You can find more at InsideTheHall.com and also follow Alex on Twitter at Inside the Hall. Leave us with this, your thoughts on the Seymour Sectional. You're a New Albany grad. You have taken in that sectional a number of times, and I know keep a close eye on those local teams.
Well, I can't say I've followed it as closely this year as I have in the past, but I do know that New Albany and Floyd Central play Friday night, and I'm never going to pick against New Albany. So I'm going to go with New Albany to avenge the regular season loss against the Highlanders and go on to Saturday, and then I'm going to go ahead and stick with the Bulldogs to win the sectional. So don't let me down.
All right,
New Albany.
Great thinking for Alex Bozich. I'm sure Jim Shannon's smiling if he's listening to your interview right now. Alex, thanks for the chat. Always great to catch up and talk IU basketball. We'll do it again next Thursday. We'll see where IU's at that point.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks.
All right, Alex Bozich with us Thursdays on the program. We'll head to a commercial break. One final segment coming up, Lee and I on high school basketball. We'll take a look at also some of the top performances over the last week, which would include the end of the regular season and the start of sectional play on Tuesday and Wednesday at some sectionals here in the area. We'll also take a look at the weekend schedule, have a player of the week, and a lot more coming your way next on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
We're back on this Thursday program. Last night, sectional basketball taking place across the state. Some sectionals, those seven-teamers, give you the opportunity to have some basketball on Wednesday night as well. Up at Charlestown, they're hosting the 3A sectional. Some good games. Cordon defeated North Harrison 70-56, although the game was really much closer than that. Cordon did not take off for the big lead until the final minute or so of the game with some free throws and some runouts on late baskets. But how about this Cordon? I could see where they could be a dangerous team. Bradley Naley, he's an American University recruit, so he's going to play D1 basketball. I don't even know that a lot of people in the area know him or know his name. He had 27 points last night to lead Cordon against their county rival in Harrison County, North Harrison. Also last night, Salem defeated Scottsburg, another good game. It was down to the wire, 59-55, the final score. So at Charlestown, that sets up the big matchup from the Tuesday game, Brownstown against Silver Creek on Friday night, which will be very interesting. The winner of that is the, I think, outright favorite to win that sectional. And perhaps if it's Silver Creek especially, maybe to even make a run into the state tournament. Then the other game will be the two winners from last night in that 3A sectional. Cordon and Salem will take on each other. Also last night, some Wednesday games at Crawford County in the 2A sectional. Providence and Clarksville. How about this? 62-60, Providence wins. Nick Sexton hit a three-pointer with 1.8 seconds left to lift Providence against their town rival Clarksville. And on top of that, Sterling Huber, he had another great shooting performance. He broke out against New Albany. He had 26 points last night, 8 three-pointers in the game. And I know we're going to talk about him here in just a minute as well when we look at some of our top performers. But last night, Providence winning a nail-biter against Clarksville and Paoli. How about this? They're one of the favorites in that sectional along with Crawford County. They just barely get past Henryville, and a lot of that is thanks to Cade Badger, who Kenzie Winstead did a terrific feature story on the HoosierHillsHoops.com site earlier in the week. He had 28 points, 16 in the final period to close out his high school career at Henryville. So some exciting sectional action even last night, and now everything is set for Friday night. Lee Kelly.
Going to be some great games coming up. Can't wait for all of those Friday night games. And you know there's going to be surprises. I mean, there are favorites, but you kind of throw them out the window when you get to tournament time. We saw that last night. You wouldn't think that Henryville would be able to stay that close to Paoli, and yet they did. You wouldn't think Clarksville would be leading necessarily, but yet they did. And there are a lot of young players whose names we are going to read today and have read all season long that are coming up that are going to light it up next year as well.
A lot of big performances, again, not just the ones I mentioned from last night, but throughout last weekend, the final week of the regular season, Tuesday night with sectionals beginning, Wednesday night with some first-round action, as I mentioned as well. A lot of things to highlight over this last week of play.
Yeah, absolutely. Shall we start?
Yes.
All right. New Albany Bulldogs continue their winning ways with a 46-43 win over Bloomington North. Derek Stevenson led the way with 16. Chris Johnson had 11. That was the 10th win in a row for New Albany.
Yeah, New Albany playing good basketball even without Julian Hunter. I think a lot of people, including myself, interested to see how they would respond without Hunter, who went down with a broken leg in the Providence game. Of course, their biggest challenge yet without Hunter coming up Friday night when New Albany and Floyd Central hook up. Jeffersonville had a two-hour trip to take on Castle, and I really thought this was a great win for the Red Devils to close out the regular season. It was a 10-point victory for Jeff. Freshman Will Lovings-Watts really coming on. He had 17 points in the win to lead Jeffersonville. Balance scoring from the Red Devils, Trey Coleman 12, Devin Franklin 11, Jacob Jones 10. And as much as I bragged on that win for the Devils over Castle, Castle gets upset earlier this week on Tuesday night. Just a game no one saw coming. Evansville Central beat Castle in that 4A sectional down at Evansville North. Of course, that sectional feeds to the Seymour Regional as well, so we always keep an eye on that sectional. But that was a big upset. I didn't list that on Wednesday morning. I was going through upsets across the state. I didn't list that in my discussion, but afterwards I thought, gosh, that may have been the biggest surprise, at least to me, with some local implications, was Castle getting beat out of the tournament. But Jeff had no problem with them either.
Yeah, they did. Central apparently did a great job of shutting down Alex Hemingway, their big star that's going to Clemson, and picked up that win. New Washington Providence hooked up over the weekend of the last weekend of the regular season. Mustangs claiming a 61-48 win. Jesus Diaz had 21, Bo Geltner 20 for New Washington. Providence was led by Nick Sexton with 13. Burke had 11, Huber had 10.
Silver Creek came out firing. They led 33-13 at the end of the first period at Seymour last week. And then when it was all said and done, the Dragons finished 93-58 for the victory, their 19th win of the season. Zane Gross, 23 points. Trey Kaufman, 17 points. Ty Kessinger, 16. Cooper Jacoby, 11. Again, that's a dangerous group of players that I just named, and even scarier for the Dragons' opponents. There's other players not in that top scoring right there that very easily could be in the next game out for the Dragons. Going to be really interesting. We'll talk more about this here in a minute, but going to be really interesting to see how Silver Creek handles Brownstown this second time around.
I agree. That brings us to Tuesday night sectional results. Jeff picked up their 17th victory of the year with a 70-44 mismatch over Seymour. Balance scoring again, the Jeff way, with Trey Coleman scoring 16, Caleb Mason coming off the bench to score 12 on 4 3-pointers. Darren Starks had 11. 9 players hit the scoring column for the Red Devils.
And Floyd Central equally made it a long night for Jennings County. 70-47 was the final score in that game. As usual, that's the only way I know to describe it at this point. All-state, all-star candidate Kobe Barnes led the green and gold with 30 points in the win. He is playing great basketball, consistently reaching 30 points or higher here the last couple weeks of the regular season. Nick Winchell was big for the Highlanders on Tuesday night. He'll be needed Friday night in that game against New Albany. 16 points for him. Also, Jake Heidbreeder with 12 points in the game for Floyd Central.
Doc Nash and the Borden Braves had tasted victory only 3 times this season, but Tuesday, a different story. Borden won as freshman Sterling Michael took the ball the length of the court, scored at the buzzer, and that gave the Braves the upset win. Michael finished with 19. A.J. Walter led New Washington with 11.
Brownstown ended Charlestown season 80-52, the final score. Bo Broniker, 17 points for Charlestown. Caleb Brown, 11. Matthew Perella, 10 for the Brownstown team, for Charlestown, I should say, in the loss.
Okay. Sounds good. Wednesday night sectional performances. Providence found themselves trailing 36-18 in the first half, but managed to come all the way back as Nick Sexton drained a 3-pointer with 1.8 seconds left for the final score. Providence 62, Clarksville 60. Pioneers led by Sterling Huber, 26. 8 of 10 from 3-point range.
Wow.
Hayden Burke had 18. For the Generals, Devon Fuqua had 23. Kayshawn Miner, 17, and Dakota Caps, 11.
I tell you, some names for Clarksville. I know their season is over. I know they wanted that game. That's a rival game for them, a game Coach McEwen thought potentially they could win. But they've got some young players back. Fuqua has just scored the ball unbelievably for this Clarksville team. Caps is a young player as well that will be back for the Generals. They've got some brighter moments ahead of them, I believe, over the next couple seasons as well. Paoli last night, they held on for a 56-54 win. I mentioned this at the start of this segment. Cade Badger, 28 points. Weston Allen, 16. And how about this? Badger had 16 of his 28 in the final period as well. And then, of course, we told you at Charlestown, Corden a winner over North Harrison. Salem defeated Scottsburg. And with that, Lee, we can look ahead to the pairings on Friday, starting at Seymour. Jeff against Bedford, Floyd Central against New Albany. We'll have on coaches Shannon, Sturgeon, and Luce from that sectional tomorrow. Should be a lot of fun at Seymour. I think people going to come out for this Friday night session at Seymour. I don't know that we'll see 8,100 there like we did last year or maybe the last couple of years, but I still think it'll be the place to be on Friday night, and I expect a great crowd there.
Got to Seymour Tuesday night, pulled into the parking lot, weren't many cars, no lines, and I thought, surely I don't have the wrong night for the sectional, but just didn't look right. 3A at Charlestown, Silver Creek will match up with Brownstown. Corden Central will take on Salem.
And give us the pairings for the others, if you would, as well.
2A at Crawford County, Austin and Crawford County will match up, and Providence and Paoli in the second game there. In the 1A at Borden, Christian Academy will take on the host school Borden, and Lanesville will take on South Central.
Yeah, okay, so I would be very disappointed, Lee, if we don't talk again next Thursday when you're in studio preparing for the regional round of the tournament, if we don't have almost, and I guess maybe 2A stands out as an opportunity where we could not, but I'll be disappointed if we don't have three sectional champions from either Clark or Floyd County preparing for some big regional games next weekend.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'll feel the same way. It'll be a very disappointing year, and there's some pressure on some people that are favorites in those sectionals.
Lee Kelly, thanks for being with me on this Thursday program as always. Don't forget you can find the podcast on SoundCloud or Apple Podcasts. That's going to wrap it up for today. I'll return on Friday at 11 o'clock for our Friday show. Then, of course, sectional basketball Friday night right here on the Big X Sports Radio.